The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Everyone to Spin the Rally Pod. Goodness me, it's rally week again. It's come round almost far too quickly. It really has. My name's Colin Clark. Joining me today is George Donaldson, our former team boss. Good morning, George. How are you?
Morning, Colin. Very well, thank you. You've been on your travels?
I have. I've been very fortunate. I was very fortunate in that I was down on the other side of the world in Australia for a few weeks. So covering the Australian Targa Championship, and there's you know, it's a great event. I very, very much enjoyed it, George. But also joining us this morning is Luke Berry, one of our writers at Dirtfish. Luke, how are you this morning?
I'm very well, Colin, and thanks very much for keeping me on. I'm starting to feel almost like a regular in this podcast now, which is a dangerous position to be in.
No. Your input is always greatly appreciated. But I tell you what the danger is, boys. The danger is it's becoming a Scottish podcast.
Oh, it is a Scottish podcast now. That's terrible. Fortunately, none of us have particularly strong Scottish accents, if you like.
What are you trying to say, George? You're saying we're posh?
I wasn't saying that at all, actually. I'm just saying that. I mean, I've worked on the continent for 20 years, as you know, and I had to modify my language. When I first joined the team, nobody could understand me. After 2 days, one of the boys took me aside and said, George, look, you're a really nice guy, but nobody can understand you. Slow down the way you speak. After that first event, 3 weeks, I went home and I got the piss taken out of me, rotten, when I got home, because the way I spoke had changed. Yeah. And I learned, I had to learn to say the words as they are, rather than in the local vernacular that I was used to. My language modified itself over the course of a couple of weeks, and it never went back. So that's why I hardly think I'm posh, Colin.
No, I agree with you. I had the same thing. I went to London when I was 17, 18, and just got tired of repeating everything, as you do coming from Dundee when you live down south. I got exactly the same accusations. You go back home and everyone goes, what's happened to your accent? Well, it's still there. But
I got new orifices opened in me for the way I talked. It was terrible. Oh.
But, there we go. Hey. Look, you've got all that to come, young man. You're still up in Scotland, right?
I am, but occasionally I get it. But I think my accent's very weird. Like I don't think I sound very Scottish at all, to be fair. Even up here, I don't feel like I sound very Scottish. So it's interesting. But you're right. I definitely, though, Colin, would not argue that it's a problem that it's a Scottish podcast there. I think that's a brilliant thing. But there we are.
I agree totally.
Boys, it's a world championship, a world championship podcast, guys. It's a rally. It's the rally. Rally is a nationality of its own, and it transcends any national borders. Don't care about them. Only care about rally. Bang.
It really does. You're quite right. Well, having said you only care about rally, George, shall we start with Extreme E, or shall we start with rally? Let's actually start with rally. That makes a lot more sense. Snowdrift Rally at the weekend, gents. First round of the ARA Championship. It's a very, very unique event, this one. Luke, you were following it. Tell us a little bit more about the Snowdrift. It's got a very particular set of regulations that make things interesting.
it does, yes. Yeah. So it's not like what we'll see this week in Sweden, where the cars are going possibly faster than they will anywhere else on the calendar. In Snowdrift, we don't have use of studded tyres. Michigan state law prohibits it. So you imagine driving any kind of rally car on some snow, and without any extra grip, and it's not something that's going to be particularly easy. But this year, actually, was particularly bad. I think a lot of people were calling it ice drift instead of snow drift this year. The ice layer was incredibly prominent this time round. So I think average speeds were struggling to get above 40 miles an hour for the event, which is just
crazy
for a rally. Yeah. And it's not what you expect at all. But if anything, I think it's almost even more skillful than driving flat out between the trees. And I might get slaughtered for saying that, I'm not sure, but trying to keep your head when you're going that slowly, the patience to not hit anything. And credit to most of the competitors, because there weren't actually that many instance in retirements. Of course, there were some, but it wasn't complete chaos out there, despite what was simply awful conditions.
Well, I mean, it's so interesting, Luke, driving in those ice conditions, and the man that was walking away with it, who'd obviously had just mastered the conditions very well, he also perhaps had the best tyres, you know, or the most intelligent use of tyres. But, I mean, there's no doubting his skill. What was he leading by? 8 minutes when his gearbox broke on the last stage. Was it Semenik?
Semenik, boy.
Yeah. So his gearbox. Now, how do you break your gearbox on a rally where there is absolutely categorically no load on it whatsoever? I suspect that he either made a ridiculously silly mistake near the end of the rally, i.e. had managed to spin his wheels up and then instantly got traction somewhere and it put an input into the gearbox that broke it. Or he was just really, really unlucky and something in the gearbox that was going to fail would have failed anyway. Now, if it had been a normal rally, I suspect that gearbox, if that was the case, would have failed on the first stage because the amount of load it would have had, Colin, would be almost zero all the way through that rally.
Just you saying that, George, I remember when we were in Mexico a few years ago, Juho Hanninen, he went off backwards and he broke his gearbox by... Did he select first gear, you know, while the car was still going backwards and the gearbox just exploded? You can imagine a situation like that on a snowdrift where you lose forward motion, you're going
absolutely
backwards. You know,
absolutely,
something you select reverse, something like that could easily happen, couldn't it?
It could easily happen, and even with the loads being that low, that type of error can be very, very expensive. So maybe it was something like that. But look, I mean, the guy that won must have been, I mean, in terms of power... In the top 10, he was probably the lowest powered car in the whole of the top 10. But the guy, I mean, what a fantastic leveler that event was. And we say that the average speeds are low. You can understand, you know, quite a fast flowing rally in places on ice. Those cars would still be doing 70, 80, 90 miles an hour on probably wet, slippery, pure ice, hardly any grip at all. And they're looking ahead saying, okay, I'm going to have to slow down for that. They're having to dump all of the speed. You know, you're doing 70, 80, 90 miles an hour and you're going to have to dump all that speed to get round a hairpin at the end. And, you know, you will not be able to carry any speed through it. Yes, you'll still go sideways, but you'll be going sideways and handbraking in at like 1 mile an hour. Otherwise, you're just straight off into the snowbank where you will be stuck for 5 minutes. Albeit it had gone very icy, so the snowbanks would have been hard. On the plus side, you bang off them. On the minus side, it tends to do a little bit more damage to the car body, but actually normally not breaking a car, but depending
here's
how solid
thing,
it is.
George, and Luke, you might be able to just confirm this with me. It's the tyre choice. It's an open tyre choice, right?
Yeah.
But it's road tyres. It's only road tyres. So we see specialist tyres developed for obviously, you know, we understand no studs are allowed.
Well,
but you have special snow tyres, don't you?
Colin,
give you extra,
extra soft.
But you're not allowed to use those. It's got to be, as I understand it, certainly a few years ago, it's got to be road tyres. So they can be snow tyres, they can be whatever type, but, you know, they've got to be road tyres.
In my experience, the best ice tyres you can buy, snow winter tyres, you can get all different grades. I bought some from a friend in Finland, got me these tyres, and they were actually Japanese tyres, but they were sold in Finland. I think they were Bridgestones. Could they be right? Or maybe Dunlops, I can't quite remember. But they were so soft, it was almost, they almost felt like plasticine. And I put them put the four of them on my wife's car, went out for a drive. And the car was, the sidewalls of these wheels were also so soft, so pliant to make sure that there's no sharp inputs to break the traction they generated. And we only fitted them on in winter. And I just had to go out with my wife for the first mile that she drove it around a few corners to make sure she wasn't going to sling in at her normal speed. Once she understood that, it wasn't like dreadful or anything, it was just different. But the traction of those tyres was ludicrous. I'm used to changing to winter tyres. Those particular winter tyres were on a two-wheel drive 2004 Avensis Estate. That was probably about 15 years ago. The car wasn't old when we fitted them. And she could go out in winter and she wondered what all the fuss was about. Because literally, you could hardly spin the tyres on this. And that was on snow and ice. They were so phenomenal. Much better than a four-wheel drive car with average tyres, even average winter tyres. This was better. It was ridiculously good. So yeah, so those types of tires are available. So I would hasten to say that probably one of those clever spec'd winter tires, road tires, is probably better than any competition tire that's available for that type of condition, because as it's unique, nobody will develop one. You do get very soft, well, you used to get, in the days of when there was more tires allowed, you used to get these very, very soft compounds on normal, so the normal Pirelli and Michelin gravel tire was available on REC in these incredibly soft compounds. And when you touched them, Colin, you would have, if you used that tire on an Acropolis rally, you wouldn't have got half a kilometre. Seriously. I mean, seriously, you would light up off the start line, you'd be stopped 500 metres later with no tires. That's how soft they were. But they were brilliant. So obviously that's not available for snowdrift, but those road tires are phenomenally good, but prone to punctures.
Well, and I suppose in the conditions that we had at the weekend at Snowdrift, you know, were punctures much of an issue? I don't think they were too bad, were they? George, can I tell you the name of my favourite tyre?
Be prepared. Be prepared to be shot out of the air if it doesn't start with a P or an M, Colin. Okay.
This is not my favourite tyre in terms of performance. Don't be silly. It's just purely in terms of its name, because it's the greatest name ever for a tyre.
How irrelevant is this?
I am curious.
Completely and utterly irrelevant.
Come on, Colin.
I heard it first mentioned in the bar. Remember that hotel that Subaru used to stay in at Lorette de Mar? It was quite a nice hotel.
It was
Tapio Laukkanen was at the bar with various other people. And someone talked to me about these tyres. And they said the best tyre ever was the Nokia. And I was like, whoa, stop there. Nokia never made tyres. Nokia.
Yeah, Nokia's they did. Right. Nokia.
The Nokia Hukupelita. I've got absolutely no idea what it is. Whether it's a gravel tyre, a tarmac tyre, a snow tyre, I don't care. It's my favourite tyre. The Nokia Hukupelita.
Very good. Well, I'm sure. I do hope we get some input back onto that via the website.
I'm sure Finland will correct us on that on social media 100%. They'll know. They will know.
Anyway, it was a brilliant event. In Michigan. I mean, what a stunning event and a worthy winner. I mean, absolutely worthy winner. Okay, Semenik was a bit robbed, but mechanical failure.
We don't know.
He made a mistake. Maybe the car just failed. If the car just failed, then I think he was lucky to have got as far as he did, because there can't be any input into that at all. The mechanical loads going into that gearbox would be, 1% of what they would normally get, literally.
Yeah, what do you know about that, Luke? Do you know whether it was just a mechanical failure or whether there was something played into it?
I don't, unfortunately, at this point, no. I did sort of try a bit of semi-investigation from my end, but I think it's one of those things that Subaru weren't necessarily very keen to tell everyone quickly. But just quickly, because before we wrap the Snowdrift part up, because we are meant to be talking about Sweden mostly in this podcast, but as ever, we've got a bit carried away. Just a massive congratulations to Mark Piotrowski, because it's one of those brilliant stories, isn't it? Proper underdog. He's one of these, what we'd call a clubman competitor. He's done it, everything on a sensible budget, family team, unfancied car, and he's achieved something I don't think he even thought he could do. So massive congrats. It is what we need from a championship. It's a feel-good story.
It really is. And what's happened there, he's taken his opportunity brilliantly. The guy isn't going to win rallies, particularly in that spec of car. And with that kind of level of funding. But he's gone out, he's taken his opportunity, he's driven, as you say, George, it's a rally that required a certain approach, and he's kept his head, he's kept his cool, and he will live off this forever. Well done, Mark.
He will do, but the point being there, Colin, is, Luke, I'll correct you on things. I think all rally drivers, no matter how humble and small they are, when you come to a rally like that, yes, you dream of the improbable happening. If you're skilled and determined, you know that it can happen. In your heart, you know it can happen. You maybe aren't prepared to mention it publicly, but in your heart, you've got that little longing that it could happen. Now, he's managed to do it. Mark, good on you, mate. That was a fantastic result. And I know what you did. I mean, the whole event would have been on tenterhooks. And it wasn't an easy victory. I mean, it only came right at the end. But look at the gaps; they're not that big for that type of event. One little mistake, and you're down in fourth place before you know where you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done to Mark and his team.
Brilliant.
It'll be one that they'll remember for a long, long time. Now, as you said, look, we do want to move on. It is Rally Sweden week, but before we get to Rally Sweden, just a quick word for Extreme E. It was their first round, wasn't it, in Saudi Arabia? at the weekend. Extreme E, a bit Marmite last year for a lot of people. Some people really enjoyed it. Some people thought it was a bit of a waste of time. I'd have to say I saw some of the stuff that was coming out of Saudi Arabia yesterday, some of the racing and the pictures. It looked dramatic. The racing looked pretty decent. They had some big moments, that's for sure. Some fairly big crashes. I'd say it was entertaining. I certainly was entertained by what I watched, what I saw, what I read for the weekend, even if it was it a predictable win? Maybe not a predictable win, but it was quite entertaining.
Nothing was predictable there, Colin, because I can argue about the regulations, I can argue about the way it's set up, and I'm quite prepared to do that with anybody that wants to have a good discussion about it, and I'll argue it with an open mind as well, but it'll be a strong argument when it comes, you can imagine. But when penalties were applied, they were applied quickly. Maybe not just quickly enough, but they were applied quickly. Like the guy that won the event, almost immediately had a penalty applied for overspeeding in the driver change area at the switch. Great, sorts that one out nice and quickly. They narrow the track with the markers. I'm sure that I've not figured out the logistical reason for making it that narrow when it doesn't need to be. But there'll be a thought process behind it. But we did see that that nasty incident. It could have been a lot worse, actually, between Nasser and Carlos Sainz. I'm not sure what the vision is like out of these. One school of thought might have said you'd have thought Carlos would have seen Nasser coming back across the track, but I suspect that he couldn't. And I would suggest that he certainly didn't. Whether he could or not is a moot point, but he quite clearly didn't, because nobody would ram a car that put himself out of it effectively.
The strange thing about that, George, the very strange thing was the argument that ensued afterwards.
Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it?
With NASA saying that he had, what did he say his problem was, Luke?
Power steering. He said his power steering had failed, but then the stewards. But then, look, data can be very wrong, yeah, and it can be wrong at the very highest level, yeah, the very very highest level. Data can be wrong. That said, you've got top drivers who will be very determined and absolutely sure that they are right.
There's
history of both these drivers. I've actually been in stewards' room with both these drivers supporting them. Right. Yeah, going in there arguing the toss in front of stewards, saying this is what happened, this is what happened, and this is what our driver says. And I've gone in there with a strong argument and a good case. And the stewards say, okay, George, I understand what you're saying. Very good. You're sure that's your story? I said, look, I wasn't there. My driver, I've debriefed the driver, I've debriefed the co-driver. We've actually spoken to some people that were there. This is what happened. You're making a summary judgment without all the facts. And okay, we appreciate your facts. Have a look at this video, George. And they pull something out that they've got that you didn't have. Oh, okay. And then you can see that that's not what happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
The driver said, oh, I lost it under braking, and then I stopped and I reversed a little bit and I went back out the right way, out of a chicane. And it turns out they came down, tried to brake, quite clearly gave up on braking 50 or 60 metres before the chicane, found a way through the chicane and accelerated away without any loss of time. Yeah. Ooh, but
You're not talking about Greece a few years ago, are you, George?
That could be one of them, yeah. But there's lots. I can tell you in that type of incident, there's more than one for all drivers. All drivers, look, they're determined and they're focused and they're filled with adrenaline. These men are not liars or deceivers, but you're in the business of catching every advantage you can and minimising any disadvantage you can. It's the nature of the beast, I mean, I remember having to go back to drivers and say, look, I've seen the video. You said you stopped. You told me you stopped, engaged reverse, did a three-point turn and went back. Look, I've seen the video of it. I've checked where it is. The video is showing the junction, that it's the right junction. But I definitely didn't do that. Okay, well, there's a car with your car number on it, with your driver name on the bottom that went right through that chicane. That's not what happened, and they go away shaking their heads. I've seen it, and I've been there. you're almost having a check. You're looking around, you're saying, am I actually in the same universe as these guys? But actually, they do live in a separate universe, and it's that very, very, very rarefied space that gives them that competitive edge. Even when they haven't got it, they'll try and get it. You've got to love it. You've got to live with it. So I think that was basically what we saw there was Nasser not prepared to admit he was wrong, and Carlos not prepared to say that, well, maybe I could have missed him, but he was in the wrong, so I just hit him anyway, which is kind of what happens in a lot of accidents, isn't it? I've only seen it a couple of times. I've not pored over it to understand. And I've not, you know, sit in the driver's seat and see what the view is. You know, did Carlos have a chance? The role that we saw earlier from, was it Christina?
Christine. GZ, they call
yeah. You know, that role there, the first time I watched that, I said, you can't have rolled from there. And then I watched it again, and I watched it again, and I watched it again. I mean, she comes down, the car is quite clearly generating, you know, some sideways motion. It's nearly getting kicked up on two wheels. There's quite obviously ruts. The car is quite clearly starting to go quite a few metres before it does, and there is no effort made at all visibly that you can see externally from outside for her to catch that car. And I'm going to say this, controversial now, I have some of the accidents I've watched in that program in that series. I've looked at them and thought that shouldn't be happening. That's just not understanding what's happening around you. That's, you know, I'm not going to say driver competence or anything like that because I'm not in the car. I don't understand its intricacies, but that car is either missing a little bit of feedback to the drivers, you know, because it's all electric. It's hard. Yeah. But those accidents, I watched that one, that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah,
It was tough, hard, shouldn't have happened.
But, you know, to be fair to the drivers involved and you know, not knowing all the facts, obviously, about how those accidents happened.
Maybe it's the cars.
One second, George, one second. The surface. Yeah, you know, we've seen a number of similar accidents in Extreme over the past year. You know, there are question marks over the suspension. A number of people, Carlos Sainz in particular, has raised concerns and issues about the suspension. And a lot of these accidents have very, very similar traits. Yeah. And the car does seem to be, at times, a little bit unpredictable. But look, the predictability that I talked about was the winners. You know, it was last year's champions. It was Rosberg, wasn't it, who won the event. But here's the thing that really we've been asking questions about for the last almost 2 weeks now. You know, Molly Taylor, you know, was replaced in that team, you know, didn't seem to put a wheel wrong last year, but didn't get the drive this year. Do we have any more news on that? Molly Taylor's a friend of the World Rally Championship. You know, we saw her competing last year and you know, she's been around for a long time. What do we know? What do we know, Luke, if anything, about that situation, that strange situation?
Surprisingly little, Colin. And I think that is quite interesting because you and I were sort of talking about it off air. It's not normally like Molly to not say much. She's not normally sort of private with it, which makes me think that, I mean, we don't know. We can only speculate, but I don't think it was an expected or a particularly amicable split, potentially.
It doesn't sound like it. No. It really doesn't sound like it.
Sponsors, maybe money coming into the team, you know, personal sponsorship being allowed. Those, there's many, many factors can do it. It quite often comes down to money at the end of the day, or opportunity or status. But I mean, Molly certainly had the status within the team.
The strange thing, though, George, is that we're not hearing the story yet. You know, I mean, there is clearly a story to be told there, and we're not hearing the story. But that'll come out as the season goes on. And all we can say is that, you know, Rosberg clearly have got a good setup there. They've won again. Yeah. They lead the championship. So they have a good setup there. They've got a great team, a good car. And we will follow, you know, their exploits this year with interest. I thought it was a half-decent start to the year. Remember last year, when the first round was in Saudi Arabia, it was absolutely destroyed. The event, the spectacle, the whole thing, the launch was destroyed by the dust, and it was just a farce, to be honest.
Yeah.
I thought some of the shots that came out of Saudi Arabia this weekend were stunning. Some of the action was stunning. Some of the racing was really, really good. So, you know, it's promising, whether you like it or not, and I'm very much on the fence with Extreme E. I'm not against it. I'm not for it yet. You know, there's a lot to like, there's a lot to not like. So let's watch with interest.
Yeah, as you can tell, I'm following it to a medium extent, and I'm quite interested by it. The complexity of the way it's run, is, well, it's a you know, side-by-side racing formula. Right. It's not handicapped particularly. There is obviously the whole concept is a slightly handicapped formula in that, you know, the way the pairings go and the way that the event runs. But actually, it's pretty spectacular, and the venues, tremendous.
It's spectacular when you get a spectacular setting like we had in Saudi Arabia that allowed those lovely high wide cameras. Uh-huh. Really spectacular. But boys, let's move on.
Sweden,
we're half an hour in.
Sweden.
Those two talks were just a prelude to really the main course, and the main course this week is Rally Sweden. Now, lots and lots of testing ahead of this week, as you would expect. For me, there seems to have been more than usual. I'm sure that's not correct, because I know it's very much stipulated the amount of testing you can do. But one of our friends, a friend of Dirtfish, was at the testing. A guy called Freddie Gustafsson. Freddie is one of the biggest rally fans in Sweden. He's actually also a professional golfer. He drove 700 kilometres from his home and spent nearly 10 days up in the frozen north of Sweden, following and documenting the tests. David Evans caught up with him.
So joining the podcast now is Fred Gustafsson, who is somebody that I've known for a long time. And no trip to Rally Sweden is the same without bumping into Fred, who was always usually wearing a Citroen jacket. Now, welcome, Fred. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
No, our pleasure. Just tell us a little bit about your involvement in Rally Sweden and why I usually saw you in a Citroen jacket.
It's a long story. From the beginning, I grew up in Råda, just outside Hagfors. The stages and the rally cars has been passing just outside the corner for since I was a kid. The interest just came when I was young, and it increased when I got older. And from when Loeb entered the scene, or the stage, or how do you say, here in Hagfors and Sweden, many people at the time were Solberg fans, Peter. And then I've always been a little bit trying to be the opposite compared to everybody else, and then I just choose to cheer for the French guy.
Yours was that one French flag in amongst all of the Swedish and Norwegian flags, was it?
Yeah, you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. But to put it into context, Fred, you when you say Rudder, that is obviously that was the old Shakedown stage.
Exactly.
You could almost hear the cars from your house.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, my parents' house where I grew up, it is maybe 1 kilometer from the Shakedown stage. And the golf course, which is just beside the Shakedown stage, that's the course where I grew up and learned to play golf as well. So it's really in my area, you know. So when you think about it, Råda is such a small place. And when you are out, maybe sometimes I've been out running or just driving with my car on that stage, and you think that how many world champions have been driving on this stage, you know?
That's incredible, isn't it? You know,
it really is incredible, yeah.
You're underplaying a little bit. You know, you don't play golf. You're a professional golfer. At a very high level. You obviously, Citroen, work with elite athletes, and they obviously were interested in working with you, getting you on board to look after the drivers a little bit. And so you got a call in 2014 to come and help them. And it really sort of stemmed from there, didn't it? You've become... Really, you were part of the Citroen team when they were in Sweden.
Yeah, it was like that. Maybe not help the drivers, but, you know, I think they really appreciated my support for the team and the drivers. So then they just wanted to do something nice to me. And then they just asked me to jump along. And I did some interviews during the years. And so it was really amazing, you know, to be on the other side of the fence. You know, I've been walking in that service park in Råda since I was a kid. I think the first time they used it was in 2003. That was the first time they used the Hagfors Airport as the at the service park, and you know, to just 11 years after, just be on the other side, to be in the inside the Citroën team like a guest. And I remember I had lunch with sitting next to Yves Matton and Marie-Pierre. So it was crazy, but they really took care of me and treated me like one in the team. So I was to Spain that year too, and they always been taking good care of me. So I really appreciate that, because without Citroën, I would probably not have been having that many contacts and to know so many people that I actually do at the moment. Yeah. So it was great. It was great.
No, it is absolutely. Now, sadly, Citroën is no more in the WRC as a Rally One team. So your role has changed a little bit. And here is, you know, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Fred, always. But this at this point, it really is a pleasure, because I don't think there's anybody in the entire world that has seen and knows more about the Rally One cars, all three of them, in a Rally Sweden specification than you. You have spent the last week in and among the three teams while I've been testing. You've helped them close the roads. You've worked with Thomas Rådström, who is the man who runs all of testing, really, in Sweden. First of all, tell us a little. First of all, Fred, tell us, how do you say, I've been saying Umeå quite happily for a long time now. How should I be pronouncing it?
It sounded pretty good. You maybe should try to learn from more Swedish. maybe the correct. It was pretty good. In Sweden, we say Umeå.
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 Umeå. Umeå. Yeah. Right. I will be a little bit ahead of Colin Clark when we.
Yeah.
Umeå. Okay.
But that's easy, you know, to be ahead of Colin, you know.
That's very true. It's much harder to be ahead of George Donaldson, but it's very easy to be ahead of Clarkie.
Yeah. Maybe you should ask Colin about, I think it was night to Sunday, Rally Sweden 2015.
Yeah.
When he stayed at a place where I know the people who live there, and he had a room there to sleep. Right. And I just went there in the evening and just bumped up that door to his sleeping room, and we were sitting there for maybe, I don't know how long I was there, maybe 1.5-2 hours. He was lying in the bed and I was sitting on the floor, and we were talking about Rally Sweden in general, and Loeb and Oscher and all that, you know, Citroën, Volkswagen.
Wow. I did briefly wonder, Fred, where that story was going with Colin sitting up in bed. So I'm glad we're a family show. I'm glad we talked about rally cars. But we will ask Colin about that. But you got home this morning at 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah. So it's
about the last week of your life. It's been a pretty special one.
Yeah, it's been good, you know. Like it's been now for it's soon 10 years. I've been the guy who is visiting the tests, and sometimes I'm helping the guy like Thomas who runs the test as well. But I've been the guy who is posting videos on social media, on Twitter and stuff like that. So the rally fans all over the world, they kind of know that the guy to follow the weeks before Rally Sweden to see some tests, that is normally me. So. Yeah, it's been great, you know, and to see these new cars, and it's been a privilege to be so close now. For it's been, how many tests have I visited? Is it seven, I think.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, and you started the week with Hyundai.
Yeah, 3 days. Yeah.
So. I'm sure it's not easy to say, but what are your thoughts on what you saw? Obviously, you weren't in the service park, but you were out watching on the stage. How do the three cars look? How do they compare? What are your thoughts on these cars going into Rally 2?
That's a good question. The difficult thing is that you see the same car for 3 days in a row, but and with different drivers, and it also is different stages, which can change a little bit. Like Neuville stage was a bit more with a bit more corners and twisty compared to Tanak's road. The day after was a bit more straight and a bit faster. So yeah, it's tricky to say, but for sure, all over the week, the Toyota looks good. You know, it feels like it's always been. It looks really fast, and they get the car, how do you say, down the traction, so it really sits on the road pretty good. And the Puma, the M Sport Ford, it just looks all around solid. It's good, you know. So, and the Hyundai is looking good as well. Maybe it's, everybody knows that it was maybe a struggle in Monte. So maybe that is, how do you say, affecting the way you look at it. So, but I guess, you know, Tanak looked good, so I think he will, with his starting position, I think he will be up there in Sweden if everything works out well.
I think definitely, you know, Tanak is the guy, isn't he, in these conditions that we saw in Arctic Rally in Finland last year, that if there is an issue with the car or if the car's not quite perfect, for sure on this rally, he can really carry the car. But it's just whether or not they have managed to iron out all of those difficulties that they had on the opening round. It's going to be difficult. But as well, you know, Oliver Solberg showed really well and has good experience in the snow. So, you know, he's a countryman of yours, Oliver. He's a fellow Swede. I will be rooting for him.
Absolutely, absolutely. He's a nice young gun, and I'm really, really happy to see that he's driving with the Swedish flag on the window. I was maybe afraid a couple of years ago that when Oliver just enters the stage, he will probably go with the Norwegian flag like his dad. So,
yes.
But I'm really happy to have a Swede in a manufactured team again. So it's really good. Yeah. And he was driving really well on the test. I was only there in the morning because then I have to go to the Evans test and to close the access road there. So I didn't see the whole day, but what I could see, it was looking good. You know, he's enjoyable to watch, Oliver. I hope we will have a good rally.
He is, but I think, you know, the big question is, can Toyota bounce back from the disappointment of Monte? You know, when Ogier was so close, and if you look at a car that has been created on these kind of roads in these kind of conditions, it probably is the Toyota, isn't it, coming from Evascula, where they're in the snow and ice for 3 or 4 months of the year?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, for sure, we don't know the forecast now and what will happen in the next week and the days just before the rally, if it comes on fresh snow or not. But when you look at it now, how it normally is, I would say that both Alvin and EP, Lappi, will be really strong on Friday, I would say. And both are in a Jaris, so I think they will be really quick.
And Calais as well, you know.
Yeah, for sure. He's first on the road then, so that depends a little bit about the forecast, but we will see.
True. Yeah, no, that's true. And just tell me a little bit about, I know it's a new area to you as well. Umeå.
But you're still better than Colin.
Yeah, for sure. It's a new place to you. It's a completely new place to all of us.
Yeah.
What's the city like, and what are the roads like?
Yeah. The city is maybe it's around Karlstad in size.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit bigger. But as the stages, I haven't really seen the stages. I've only been on the tests. Maybe a bit more snow than we're used to. For sure, 2018 was really good in Torsby area as well. But what I felt during the test is that, you know, walking around like a spectator, like I did, I think that the forest, you know, the trees feel sometimes a bit closer to the road.
Right.
Yeah. So I think in Värmland area, it was a bit more open. So, you know, on Lappi's test, the last part of that test stage, you know, if you just jumped up on the snowbank, you had the forest just behind your back. So you couldn't really go more than 1 meter away from the snowbank and the road. So that was a bit tight. Yeah. So
yeah.
I would really, when I have the chance now, really say to everybody who is going there next week to watch the stages, you need to follow the marshals, the recommendations and all that to have a safe and good rally.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. A great message. And we can see from your fantastic videos that you've posted on Facebook. And if you want to look on Facebook, it's Fredrik Gustafsson. Find out there. Hopefully Fred will allow us to run maybe one of his videos on Dirtfish as well, so we can
absolutely
use that. But the one thing that is very clear, Fred, is that there are good snowbanks. We are in for a real proper winter rally here, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. The conditions looks really, really good. So I don't think we will see any drivers being negative about the conditions. So I think everybody will be happy, and also on the TV all over the world, it will be a proper winter rally.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if you had 10 euros of Colin Clark's money and you went to Bookmakers, where would you be putting that money?
On what? On which driver to win?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, you know, my heart says Craig or Oliver, but if you, regarding what we have been talking about, I think it should be on the, I think Evans have a good chance as well in the Yaris, starting a bit back.
Yeah,
I think he will be strong, but it's really difficult. I would say it's between Evans, Lappi and Tanak, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I was going to say, from your video today, the Breen video that you posted, there looked like there was an awful lot of snow in there. But here's the thing. So you had finished your work on the test roads with Hyundai and Toyota.
Yeah.
You then were faced with a 700-kilometer drive home. But instead of doing that, what did you do?
Yeah, I drove 460 kilometers straight west to Craig's test.
Yeah, he's an old mate of yours, as an old Citroen driver.
Yeah,
that's some commitment. A good 5 hours drive.
Yeah,
to go and see it, but it was worth it. It was good action there as well.
Absolutely. I you know, Craig is he's a good friend, and he's such a nice guy. So yeah. I would never ever been just driving back home to Hagfors we're not going to Craig's test. I would not do that. It will not happen.
No, these are the things, aren't they? You know, when we have these opportunities of having, you know, these incredible drivers in our home countries, you've got to make the most of it.
Certainly
it sounds like you have definitely made the most of the last week. It's fantastic to have you in the podcast, Fred. Thank you very much for your time, and hopefully we will get time for a hot chocolate or something next week.
Yeah, my pleasure to be here, and make sure to take care of Colin when he comes to Sweden with this high snowbanks. You know,
I will take great care to push him very firmly into the snowbank.
Yeah, very, very deep. Very, very deep. And then you put some extra snow in the hair of him. Oh,
yeah, they won't find him till the summer. That'd be
no.
Excellent, mate. I look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you very much for the time.
Yeah, thank you, David.
Right, Colin, what is that story about Freddie in your bedroom? But actually, I've asked that question, but nobody, I guarantee you, nobody wants to know. So George, just let it go. That move on. Let's move forward with our lives.
I really
don't want
to
know.
Tell you, but because it was bizarre. It was totally bizarre. You know, I was staying in a kind of Airbnb in Sweden 1 year, and the person that owned that Airbnb was a friend of Freddie's. You know what I'm like, George? I'm an early to bed type. You know, as soon as I've work's done, something to eat, straight to bed. It was about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and there's a rap on the door in the bedroom. And I'm in bed. I'm as you do. You know, just about asleep. And it's Freddie. It's Freddie. He goes, Colin, can I come in? And I'm thinking, oh, God, what does he want? So, Freddie, whatever you want. Thinking he's only going to come in, realising I'm asleep, you know, and completely drowsy and big day of rallying the next day. He's going to come in. He's going to be gone within 2 minutes. Plonked himself down on the floor, and we talked rallying for an hour. It was bizarre, but he is just the biggest rally fan in the world. So I allowed
Tremendous.
Him that, George. Yeah, he's a top boy.
Tremendous.
He really is.
Okay.
But listen, you know, boys, he's been out. The conditions look really, really good, don't they, as we were all hoping around him here. George, you're our resident weather forecaster. Before we talk about perhaps the teams and who we expect to go well, how is the weather looking for the week?
Okay, so I'm setting myself up to be shot as the weather forecaster. Shoot the messenger. Okay, I'm looking at a 7-day forecast at this point. Well, actually, it's only 6 days because we're only out till Sunday. So these weather forecasts can change massively. Now, we do have Easter laid across the continent at the moment. That's bringing in all the cold air from the northeast. We are seeing nice, cold, but wet conditions, moisture in the air over the next week. So today in Umeå, -6 is the coldest it's going to be, and -5 the warmest. Tomorrow, -11, -7. Wednesday, -16, but the high going up to 1 degree, -1 degree. Thursday, -3 and 4 degrees centigrade. Now, let's just tell you, and some rain at the middle of the day. So
really?
Not much. It's so little. It's literally, it's 0.1 of a millimetre per hour for a three-hour period over lunchtime. These forecasts are based on computer models, which, you know, every hour you increase its distance, it exponentially gets less accurate. But they are extrapolations. I mean, it certainly will not rain for 3 hours at 0.1 millimetre of an hour on Wednesday lunchtime, Thursday lunchtime. On Friday, it's saying -4 and 1 degree is the hottest, and snow in the morning up until lunchtime, and then sunny in the afternoon. After lunch, falling back to sort of 0 degrees, and then getting down to the small minuses on Friday night. Saturday, -5 and 1 degree, and Sunday, -4 and 2 degrees. What this means is the stages are going to be in fabulous condition. Maybe a light dusting of snow, and it is a light dusting of snow. The forecast is suggesting about 10 to 12 millimetres of snow. That's 1.1 millimetre of rain. 1 millimetre of rain is about 10 millimetres of snow, an approximation that can vary greatly depending on the moisture content of that snow and the way it falls. Not horribly cold to spectate. So the spectators are going to be having a lovely time. The cars will be dripping a little bit at the end of stages, you know, because they'll be lifting the ice, and it'll just be a wee bit warmer. But the road conditions should stay perfect, should stay absolutely perfect, but not too horribly cold. I mean, when it gets down to -15 to -25, that starts to get a bit hard to spectate. And if you get down to the -30s, it's actually starting to get kind of deadly if you're not wearing the right things. So, of course, all the Scandics do that, so it's okay.
No, the Scandies are fine. It's just Brits that disappear off to Sweden for, you know, 1 week trip a year.
People that take shortcuts through the snow and fall into a river, etc.
Yeah, that has been done before. I think David Evans might have done
it was. We've had that story before, Colin.
But here's the thing, boys. Here's the thing that's interesting for me. Road position, you know, the weather forecast kind of plays into some of the factors that we have to consider when we're talking about road position. You know, let's take a look at, you know, we'll go through it perhaps by team and see who we think are favourites to win this event and how perhaps road position may affect that. Your first on the road is going to be Kalle Rovanperä. Now, you know, it's a brand new rally. Let's look back at what happened in the brand new rallies last year. Okay, he disgraced himself, you know, professionally. When we went to Croatia and he put it off within a few kilometres of the opening stage. But the other two new rallies, and we'll call Acropolis new, he won Acropolis and he was the fastest Toyota when we went to Ypres. Now, normally, I would say Rovanperä, when you go to Umeå, on the snow and ice, kind of form we've seen from him in the past, he's going to be favourite. But what do we think? What do we think? First on the road, there's a forecast of snow. It's George, the best place to be, not the best place to be. I think it might make it a little tricky for young Rovanperä.
It definitely would. First place on the road in Sweden is not the best place to be because you will be clearing a line to some extent, and that will make a difference. It's definitely not the best place to be. That said, a determined driver can counter a lot of that, as we know, and that can vary from driver to driver quite how young Mr. Rovan Perra is going to manage that. It would be difficult to say. The guy quite clearly is just oodles of talent. This absolutely categorically is his native environment. He is going to excel there. Categorically, he will excel. It's how long will he manage it right to the last stage or not? I don't know. Nobody knows that. He has matured massively over the year, and he understands about not throwing it all away more. Will the red mist descend? Will he be able to contain himself? Well, he's a pretty measured young man, surrounded by a lot of good people who will be offering sage advice in the right quantities, not over complicating things, not giving him too much instruction. He'll be well supported to go into this event and manage what you do. So for him, his strategy has to be Friday. Let it sort itself out. Minimise any damage. Make sure you keep yourself in the frame at the very least. Who knows what those conditions are? It's 4 days away, 5 days away, really, until we see that forecast could change massively. There could be a huge amount of snow coming. If there's a huge amount of snow coming and it continues on through the morning, well, that can affect everyone equally. And it usually is worse for the first cars.
But again, it depends
on how it falls. Strange things can happen, Colin. But generally speaking, it would be tough for them. But that snow might disappear. And the rain that comes on Thursday, maybe, let's say the rain would be a little bit heavier on Thursday, making everything very icy, freezing the surface up. Maybe it rains again a little bit overnight on Thursday, Friday. And he could be going out to the most perfect skating rink surface, and you could end up with a fantastic lead at the end of the first day. Yeah. You never know that. So good luck to the guy. I think he's not out of the frame at the front. Just depends on the conditions on the day, very much.
No, I think Luke, my view is he's not out of it at all, because as I say, I think he's got a history of being able to cope. It's a leveler. New rallies are a leveler, and when we've taken out our most experienced driver, but you've still got the likes of Tanak, who massive experience, and Neuville, good starting position, and clearly his teammate Elvin Evans, massive experience. Luke, what do you reckon? What do you reckon the battle of the Toyotas? It's quite an interesting one, because at the front we've got obviously Rovan Perra and the potential problems, but further down you've got, I think, probably the fastest guy on snow and ice just now. Which seems a little odd for a Welshman, but Elvin Evans, for me, when we've seen him on snow and ice, particularly a couple of years ago in Sweden, untouchable when things go his way. He might, Luke, have the best of the starting positions.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people talking about Elvin as a favourite this week, and as you say, it's totally understandable, because I think he's starting sixth. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong there, but it's around about the mid-pack anyway, which, in theory, should give him the best of any situation, because if it does transpire that there's gravel coming through the stages and people are losing studs or whatever, the back might not be the place to be. We know the front's not the place to be. You've got Elvin slap bang in the middle, and let's be honest, he'll be determined to grasp this opportunity. We've got Noel Ogier, Noel Wilb, and the two guys at the top of the championship, so things are opening up. Elvin knows he kind of dropped the ball in Monte Carlo. He should really have been the guy that came here leading the championship. He's probably glad in a sense that he's not for this rally in particular, but he does have a point to prove. And as you say, Colin, his pace on Sweden 2 years ago, okay, it was a very different rally with not as much snow as we'd have liked, but he was just in a league of his own, really. So I think him and we can't forget Esa-Pekka Lappi as well. His return. I'm very excited to see what Lappi can do, because he does seem to be in this wonderful sweet spot in his head where he's extremely motivated, but he's not hanging absolutely everything on his success of a rally career. He doesn't look like the kind of driver that's going to go home after a weekend, not get the result he wants, and let it eat him for 3 weeks. And I think that is a very good place to be mentally.
Mm. No, I agree with you. Lappi is definitely one to watch. But here's the thing, when we talk about these drivers are all, you put them all, Lappi, Rovan Perra, Evans, you put them all in identical conditions, which you can't do clearly, but if you could, there would be very, very little between them. Very little. I'd perhaps put Evans as a nudge ahead of Rovan Perra and a nudge or two ahead of Lappi. But we know that things, particularly in the snow and ice can change so quickly, and there can be big advantages. Now, normally you look at Lappi's position, you look at Evans's position, and you might say, well, you know, snow dust becomes an issue. But George, the temperatures that you're talking about, your snow dust isn't going to become an issue. So those boys shouldn't have that to worry about. We shouldn't see any kind of readjustment because of time lost of snow dust. Is that a reasonable thing to
say? I think that's a reasonable thing to say. It's also quite windy. So although when you get down into the trees, that wind is almost gone, but it's still enough to move the dust, move any haze and har, hopefully, out of the way of them. So I don't think, from what I can see here, it doesn't look like an issue. But I'm looking at a very narrow perspective of a 5 or 6 day forecast. And my favorite in Toyota is none of yours. I'm going to go with Katsuta.
Why? You never know.
I think because I think all four of those drivers are actually very, very quick in the right conditions. Katsuta needs to bring a heck of a lot more together than the other drivers do, you know, for everything to line up right for him. But actually, his pace shows bright spots in there, Colin. And don't forget, ice and snow rallies They can bring us surprises, even when you're running spike tires.
I am not doubting his pace whatsoever. Mm. Katsuta has the pace. Katsuta is not in the right place in terms of his own personal performance and his own confidence right now. I've never seen Katsuta as defeated as he was with that off, after that off in Monte Carlo. Never heard him so down. Never heard him beating up on himself as much as he was. He needs a confidence building event. Now, what is a confidence building event from? Is it an event where he goes out on day one and sets a stage winning time or two? Or
I'll
is it an event? What is it?
I'll tell you what it is, Colin. It's the confidence building event for him would be put Dan Barrett back in the car with him. Simple as that. He needs to learn to listen to his co-drivers. You know, if anything's missing from him, it's not talent. It's the teamwork inside the car. He's had a series of great co-drivers. Dan Barrett was tried to discipline with them. I've seen them in action only once. Only saw the, and I could see the body language. It wasn't perfect between them in Safari, but by God, they could put a result together. Yeah,
I agree. And
also, I think what Katsuta does is learn to actually understand. Actually, in the rally car, when you're going in the stages, fast down the stages, you're the boss only up to a point, yeah? When you're off the stages and the strategy and managing that strategy, for Katsuta, that's the biggest skill he has to learn. And Dan Barrett had the best, has managed the best out of all the co-drivers he's had so far. I don't know if Dan is technically able to come back at this point, you know, physically, because he did get a bit of a bang around, but I would put Dan back in that car and just be done with it. I don't know what they're thinking about.
Let's just say again, for just reasons of just keeping things reasonably equal, George, you know, there's no suggestion. You know, the suggestion is that, you know, Katsuta is now happy with Aaron Johnson, and that is, you know, there's some kind of long-term deal being put in place there. But as we saw last year, you know, when things start to go wrong, and we saw it so many times in so many different cars, you know, drivers are looking at ways, you know, and the easiest way is to replace the co-driver. Mm. I heard something really interesting, just another quick throwback, boys. To Safari Rally, George, you mentioned Safari. It was classic Safari last year. And Ken Block went remarkably well on classic Safari this year. I think
lots of punctures, Colin. But, so, you know, he didn't quite read the conditions right.
Correct. That was going to be my point. You know, he didn't. Yeah. You know, classic Safari is all about management and managing the event. And going flat out is not managing. Going flat out is just keeping your fingers crossed and hoping your car holds together. You can go flat out. Of course you can. Everyone can. And it's actually not too difficult to do on the classic Safari. What is difficult is to get through without punctures, without suspension problems, without hitting something. I was impressed at times by his pace, but I saw lots of pictures and images where I thought that's over the limit. But my point was, when he put out his post-rally assessment, he talked about the number of punctures. And then he said, and my co-driver made a mistake which cost us lots of time.
I saw that.
You don't often read that from drivers. Yeah. You know, you don't often. It was a very pointed, very pointed criticism at his co-driver. And it is the easiest thing to do for a driver who's clearly making mistakes. And I would argue strongly that Ken Block's approach wasn't quite right in Safari. Whether he made mistakes or not, I don't know. I didn't follow it that closely. Well, but perhaps his approach wasn't quite right. The easiest thing to do is to look for others to blame, and the co-driver, as we've seen many, many times, is quite often the easiest.
Look, I'm sure Alex did make a mistake, obviously, but to out him like that's a bit hard, I thought. And also the Safari is quite unique and it's quite difficult. You are following these route notes and you come into these villages and, you know, the road book will show you that there are five ways out of this village and you're looking at the tracks, trying to figure it out. You've got 25 people all waving at you that way, that way, that way. Normally, they're actually telling you the truth, normally, but the road book tells you you're looking at it and you're sure it's got you going another way. It might be that you've actually even just come into that village on a slightly alternate track, and that's what's leading you down the wrong road. There's a lot of things to extrapolate very quickly. The next car might not be along for 10 minutes. You can't stop and wait and see what they do. And very often, you know, you look at any safari footage, classic safari footage, you'll see cars coming into village and then leaving on a different route. I know what I would be doing as a co-driver there. I know you're limited what you can do, but you would be understanding the lay of the land. I mean, sometimes the most useful thing coming out of these villages is a compass. If you've got an accurate compass that tells you, and you look on the map and you say, well, I actually should be heading northeast, and you look at the compass and it says you're going due north. Crikey, I'm definitely on the wrong road. Quite clearly, and that's not easy to do. I'm not saying it is, but you've got to really pull a lot of extra information in that you're allowed, and there's a limitation on what you're allowed. You're not allowed, you know, fancy bits of equipment and everything. So it's down to judgment. Alex made a mistake. I would say that, sometimes you look at it afterwards, you think, how did I do that? But actually you did. And it's the stress of the moment. Driver pushing too hard. If the co-driver's made a mistake as a driver, I've always said, what have I done wrong? Why was I not helping? You know, you're in the car together. It's a team.
Yeah, no, it was an interesting one.
It was a bit harsh.
A bit harsh.
But anyway, nothing against Aaron Johnson at all. I mean, I have met him once or twice, just very briefly. And it's a tough situation to be in, you know, and co-drivers have always been my favourite people to deal with in my WRC career. You know, professional, great teammates, everybody contributing to the win. And I'm sure Aaron is 100% doing that. All I'm saying with Mr. Katsuta is, it seems to me that Dan Barrett was the guy that managed to control them, and it wasn't easy. I actually saw it firsthand on numerous occasions in Safari Rally last year, where Katsuta was needing to actually understand. Actually, at one point, I even commented to him because I was standing there at the roadside, and there was lots of people coming up for autographs. And Dan said to him, "We've got to go now." We've got to go now. And the guy just looked at him, yeah, I'll be there in a minute. And I think to myself, so you're getting yourself down to the stage start now with minus 2 or 3 minutes, Colin, of preparation time that Dan was looking for.
Wow.
Yeah. At that point, he was leading the rally and he's robbed himself. Now, Dan asked him, and I could see Dan's frustration on his face and his body language. I could see it. And, you know, Dan was wanting to win that event every bit as much as Katsuta did, you know, maybe knowing that the inevitable was going to happen, but he wasn't giving up. And Katsuta wasn't listening to him. And I thought to myself, yeah, there's a bit more work to be done. And I could even confess, you know, does this guy need another co-driver? But at that point, I, looking at Dan, I'd have thought the guy was just about done with it, you know. There was a lack of respect there coming back towards him. But again, I'm just seeing a few minutes. I mean, I'm making a big deal out of something I only saw for a few minutes, one event. But I don't think my extrapolation is far from the truth.
Let's wait and see. I mean, what I think Katsuta-san needs now more than anything is a little bit of stability and a little bit of a chance to get that confidence back, to find that form that we saw certainly right at the start of last year building up to Safari. But for me, let's get back to Sweden. Let's talk about the favourites in Sweden. And for me, Toyota, look, I don't know if you're...
We were talking about the favourites. That's my favourite. Katsuta's my favourite to win Sweden, or the favourite Toyota driver to win. But who knows, Hyundai or Ford? Crikey, yeah, let's get on to them.
Let's get on
to
them.
A lot to talk about.
You know, for me, Toyota are the team to beat. You've got, obviously, Robin Pearce at the front. You've got Elvin in a really good position midfield, and you've got Lappi at the back of the field, more or less. You've got all bases covered. You've got three drivers there who are remarkably quick. As you say, Chuck and Katsuta as well. You've got four drivers who are remarkably quick. Toyota are the team to beat. But for me, the great unknown about this one, Luke, is M Sport. You know, what can M Sport do here, do you think, Luke? Craig Breen, is it a bit too much to say that Craig Breen is potentially, Luke, one of the favourites here?
It is hard to tell with Breen, I think, because there's a lot of new factors for him. Obviously, we know how good he is in Sweden. I think it was 2018 where he was second in the C3. So yeah, he's clearly got what it takes on this surface. But second on the road on the first day is, I don't think he's ever been there before. I haven't fact-checked that, but I'm fairly confident he's never been this high in a championship this early on in the
correct
season. So it isn't where he would have chosen to be. And I think that's a real shame in the sense of the competition this week, because I think Breen could have been right up there in the right conditions, but it will be a challenge for him to get to grips with this different skill. But M Sport as a whole, it's an interesting one, because I would agree with you, Colin, in that I think Toyota, it could be any one of their drivers that win, but I foresee it being a Yaris that wins on Sunday. I don't necessarily know why, and of course it can be proven wrong so easily, but they do seem like they've got the best balance. M Sport, despite being the championship leaders, they're not really being talked about much this week, I don't think. There's not been the same hype around them, and obviously I think a lot of that comes from Gus and Adrian. They don't have masses of experience on snow and ice. I think Formo in particular has never gone particularly well in the snow, and we all know what he needs to do this week. I think he'd be having a pretty difficult few months if he had another accident in Sweden, so he'll have a very clear target. But Craig, I think, will be sensible, as he was in Monte Carlo. There won't be any massive heroics on day one. He just needs to keep in touch with Cali. I think that's a great benchmark for him to have. Stick absolutely with Robin Pera, and if you can do that, he should be somewhere near the podium on Sunday.
I think he will be, and I, for me, the really interesting thing, and it's, you know, it provoked a lot of questions after Monte Carlo. Was the level of that M Sport car? Is it the best car? You know, okay, you'd argue that obviously that Sebastian Ogier was very, very quick in the Toyota. Elvin Evans before his off was extremely quick in the Toyota. But, you know, factor in then the situation with the M Sport drivers, Breen in a new team, you know, Greensmith making a very considerable step forward. You know, even as far as Formo in the two stages or the one and a half stages that he completed looked quick. And then Loeb coming back and ultimately winning the rally. I think there's something extra in that car. I really genuinely do believe that. And I think that could be the difference that allows Breen that opportunity if road position does in fact favour those towards the front, which it could well do. It could well do. We'll wait and see. If it does, I think maybe I'm perceiving to be extra performance from the M Sport car might be enough to give Breen that chance to keep it in there. He was quick, as you rightly said, in 2018. Remember the year that Chris Meek almost walked away from his Citroën saying it was undrivable. You know, Breen was still able to drive that car that year. You know, okay, he said some choice words about the car, but he still got a decent result out of it in Sweden. I think it's going to be an interesting test, George, of where that car's at, that M Sport car.
It's an interesting test of where the car's at. I think we know that the car is good and solid. A good, clean, easy-to-drive car, which the Ford quite clearly is, probably, you know, the measure of the field at the moment. I think it'd be fair to make that extrapolation without fear of too much contradiction. But Sweden, fast, clean stages, icy, not deep snow, that's going to favour the best car. And I think that we're all of the same opinion that the Ford is right up there. So Craig, an interesting character. He never goes crazy or flat out. He always plays the game to the end of the event. I think he is, he's the only one in the Ford that is likely to generate a win this weekend, in fairness. But for Mo, again, a super quick driver. These conditions are fantastic to drive. has he got the pace? You wouldn't suggest that he's in the political position to push for it, but I think the guy's, you know, he'll probably push it a little bit on the second and third stages to see where he is. I think he might surprise himself. I think he might go better than people think. But Craig has a great chance to win this rally. He's demonstrated the pace in the past. He's demonstrated the pace in the recent past. He takes that measured approach, and a measured approach in Sweden can win you a lot. But you know, this is a Grand Prix. This is like Finland. 18 seconds is a gulf to lose. So whilst that measured approach works, it's got to be countered. It's the balance, the latitude on this is even less than normal. You know, the normal event where we might see Thierry, you know, have his usual sort of terrible morning and then come back and win. Well, harder to do in an event like Sweden where the margins are so small, because this is going to just be flat out. The cars will all have the same top speed. At least I imagine they do. I've not actually had any data on that. And they're going to be on the rev limiters. It's going to be great.
Quite interesting. You know, it's
going to be fantastic. So I think Craig chance to win, but a top three likely.
And you could argue that Craig Breen is the most consistent driver in the World Rally Championship just now. You look at his last, I think it's six events. Look, you're better at these things than I am. You take out Croatia, and they've nearly all been, I think with the exception of a fourth place, nearly all podiums. So its consistency is right there. And yeah, I think if things go his way, he could well be there or thereabouts come Sunday afternoon. But let's move on. Let's move on to Hyundai. Now, we've discussed it ad nauseum, what we perceive to be the problems of Hyundai. Look, I don't know. I think it was David that wrote the article this week, but it worried me. It really worried me when they started talking about looking forward to Portugal. Yeah. You know, further, they're already talking about, you know, homologation changes and Joker changes. Is that a sign that they've given up on this one? Can't be, surely.
No, feel free to take it off if you want, George, because it's more... it's a trickier topic, this one. I would say is I think Hyundai are very clearly not as happy with what they've done as Ford and Toyota. They're not going to admit that publicly, but I think we all know the struggles they had at the end of last year with testing. I think they're probably going to do better than some people expect in Sweden. I don't think they could be written off. I think particularly, actually, Oliver Solberg, who, if this was 12 months ago, we'd have all been talking about him as an obvious favourite to win the rally, because we know how well he went on Arctic Finland. I think he starts as the very last car on Friday. So in theory, if everything works correctly, he could be a proper shout. But I think that homologation-wise, they're probably... It seemed like it was almost, and this is the worrying thing, it was almost in all areas Hyundai were behind. It didn't look as fast and it didn't look as reliable either. And that's not a good place to be at the start of a regulation change.
No, it was all sorts, you're right. Look, it was speed, it was reliability, it was consistency. You know, the car was clearly quick. Remember, Neuville won a stage or two. It was quick, but in a very narrow window of conditions. But here's the thing. Now, we don't have to look back too far for kind of precedent with this. It's slightly different precedent. But, you know, we look back to last year's championship and Hyundai had a shocker, an absolute shocker in Monte Carlo. And we were all, to some extent, you know, writing them, not writing them off, not dismissing them, but certainly not perhaps giving them the potential credit that we should have been for Sweden. They came back in Sweden and Ott Tanak was blindingly fast, wasn't he? Did he lead from start to finish? I think he did, didn't he? He was really, really quick there last year, and he surprised a lot of people. It was the perfect comeback. I wouldn't be writing Hyundai off, but more than that, I wouldn't be writing Tanak off. But I just can't see it happening. I can't see it happening with what we're being told, with what we saw in Monte Carlo, with what we know about the whole structure in the company just now, which is still going through this process of change. We still don't have a team principal in place. It just is not. It's a long, long way short of the perfect preparation for Hyundai.
Yeah. Am I allowed
a couple of comments,
George,
Colin?
You've had more than a few already, Georgie boy, so, you know.
Well, okay, but I've not mentioned anything about Hyundai and their drivers, so that's the fun thing. So Sweden, the conditions, very fast, very clean, very open, and... in many ways, soft on the car. the way the tires work, that there's a little bit more latitude in the way that you can handle the car. There's not much latitude in the end times, but I think this is an event where we could see Ott, maybe Oliver, and I think Thierry to a very great extent counter some of those shortfalls. As you said, Colin, a very narrow window, the car seemed to have the speed. It could be that Sweden will give them that window. They can maybe get the car set up towards that window, the window where they can get that performance. And Sweden does maintain that narrow window of setup. It's a rally that you just set your car up, you never adjust it all the way through. That would be the ideal scenario. So I think this rally could, as Luke said as well, don't write them off. I think they will surprise here. They've got two fabulously proven drivers, and they've got a young gun in there who might be under some pressure to pull back and just get a result after a very difficult Monte, which was none of his doing. But I would say to Oliver Solberg, I would say, Oliver, this is a great chance for you on your native turf, in a surface that you have to regard as your own. Go out there and just drive the socks off that car. And if you are a top driver, you will thrive and surprise on this rally. And you wouldn't expect them to win, neither on maturity nor demonstrated pace at the moment. But I think he could get an incredible result and surprise many people, and even surprise me. So I'd like to see that. But I think those guys, they're talking everything down, Colin. And like you, I was very alarmed when I saw that. I thought, oh, crikey, I've been there. I've been in a team in that situation. And when you have to start to, create your own fire break. You know, you're starting fires to stop the fire later, really. You know, your scorched earth policy in front of you. That's a hard one. Crikey, that's depressing. I think quite clearly that they've got an engineering plan. They've identified a number of things. This is positive. They'll counter it as best they can. The car obviously has pace because it did get some fastest times in that very narrow margin. So look, they're not miles away. They're just a couple of percent. It could be that those percent fall outside what's required in Sweden. Let's see. I think it's quite an exciting one. I'm really, really excited to see how they go. And I'm very hopeful for them that they can pull out more from this than they thought.
Well, you know, they did. I think I mentioned Sweden last year. Obviously, we didn't have Sweden. I'm talking about Arctic Rally Finland last year with the result, the dominant result from Tänak. You had Nouville in third there as well.
Yeah.
But
absolutely. And Colin, they do have that ace up their sleeve. I mean, it's not even up their sleeve. It's in their hand. Ott Tänak. Yeah. It's going to be amazing. You know, come what may, the guy is going to be amazing.
I hope so, but you know, for me, I'd love to know just how Tänak's feeling right now, and I think we'll get a better idea when we get to Sweden. But you know, this was due to be for Tänak the great new dawn for him and Hyundai. You know, he'd struggled for 2 years, and you know, he's a man that's missed out on two world championships. You know, he was world champion with Toyota 3 years ago, and he should have been there. Well, he was thereabouts, but you know, he knows he's got more world championships in him, but he needs the equipment. And on the evidence of Monte Carlo, Luke, you know, what could we say? You know, Tänak needs to get that car working for him, and you know, this could be his opportunity, but it needs to be more than just that one off kind of, yeah, it's worked well in Sweden, that's great. That ain't enough, Luke.
No, it's not. And I do think, as much as I agree with both of you, that I think Tänak will be very quick this week, it does feel like a massive, massive rally for him. Because don't forget, his last win in the World Championship was Arctic Finland last year. And I've not fact-checked this, but I don't think Tänak's ever gone more than 12 months between victories. So if he doesn't win this week, which it's possible, but it's potentially going to be more difficult for him than it will be for others, Is that a psychological thing that plays in the mind? Is it? He doesn't look that happy. I think that's the interesting thing. And I know there's been a lot of conspiracy theorists that quickly jumped on footage we saw after Monte Carlo with Tänak and Mr. Wilson, and the smile on his face, and people wondering, is he doing with a new deal? I don't for a second believe that he's trying to negotiate himself out of that situation yet. I think if things don't improve in the first 6 months, you're going to have a very disgruntled Tanak. And I wouldn't say, there'll be some people that are quick to potentially question his motivation. I don't think it's that at all. I don't think he's as publicly sort of defiant as maybe the likes of Thierry Neuville was. We saw that in Monty, how frustrated Neuville was getting with just the situation and trying to rally his team on. Tanak will be doing everything behind the scenes to make sure everybody's producing a better car, essentially, because as you say, Colin, he's a driver that's in his peak, but he's not quite got the tool to achieve what he should be able to.
No, it's interesting. And you know, there's an awful lot, boys, that we're going to watch with a huge amount of interest for sure this week. And the Hyundai situation is right up there, right up there. Fingers crossed, you know, we all want to see them, you know, competing at the level that we know they can compete at. And we need, for a healthy championship, you know, if Hyundai can get their act together and can find some consistency and pace with that car, you know, we have a situation on our hands like 2017. 2017, we had, what, 7 or 8 different drivers winning rounds of the championship. All 3 manufacturers won rounds of the championship. That's what a healthy championship needs. And we need, you know, the best of Hyundai. We need the best of Tanak and Neuville and, as you mentioned, George, potentially Solberg as well. Boys, before we go, I want you to give me your predictions. Luke, a 1, 2, 3. Go ahead.
Oh, you go with me first. That's pressure. Well, there is an article coming on dirtfish.com, which will be out already, actually, by the time the podcast comes out, which I don't think you boys will have seen. So I shall stick to what I've written. I put Esa-Pekka Lappi down as my winner. It's a bold choice. Ooh. Because I think if I was really focusing on my head, I would say Elvin. But I just, for some reason, I just have complete faith in Lappi this week. So I'm going Lappi first, Evan second, and Breen third.
Interesting. Georgie?
As usual, I'm going to go with my wish list, or nearly my wish list. I'm going to say Ott Tanak, Katsuta.
Well, that's an interesting one as well. Well, I'm going to go with...
It's just a wish list. It's not based on any facts.
And I've changed my mind in you using that term wish list, George. I'm going to go with Breen. Then I'm going to go with Robin Perra, and I think I'm going to go with Tanak, because I'd like to see a Hyundai.
Oh, that sounds great.
Three manufacturers on the podium. That would be a nice result for me.
I liken your wish list too. They're all great. And yeah, look, yours, Esa-Pekka, good chance for him to do it, yeah. But look, I mean, whoever wins this is, you know, I hope that they have a brilliant race. It's going to be really, really close. You can imagine, you know, Craig Breen beating young Cali. I mean, what an achievement that would be. You know, a smack in the face in the home dirt. Cali, you know, a great chance to win this too. I mean, it's going to just be the most incredible event. I'm just so excited by it. I just hope it just delivers us the flavour and the excitement that we're all looking for.
Boys, it's been fascinating. It's been a great talk this morning. It's overrun as these things tend to do. But folks, listen, thank you for joining us on Spin the Rally Pod. There's a lot more to come this week. Keep your eye out on dirtfish.com. Lots, as Luke's already alluded to, lots of Rally Sweden build-up. Obviously, we are the place to be during the event for all the news as it unfolds. Obviously, videos, we'll be doing more podcasts as well. It's going to be an exciting week on dirtfish.com. March is just round the corner, by the way. March is a big month for us at Dirtfish. It's Women in Motorsport Month, Women's Month in March, and we're being guest edited by the wonderful Michelle Mouton, and you know, that'll be fascinating to follow as well. So keep your eye out for all of that content. Boys, it's been great. It's been great this morning talking to you both again. Our Scottish podcast is done, George Donaldson.
Good. Hopefully none of us have dropped back into the vernacular and everybody could understand us.
Luke, you were the clearest and probably the most precise as well. Well done, Luke.
Thank you, but I would not make such a claim about myself, because I don't think that's particularly true. So.
I'm taking the whole thing as a slap down, Luke. Colin slapped me down. Let me give you the current temperature in Umeå, just outside Umeå. It's -6 at the moment. And that has stayed stable overnight. It's maybe dropped half a degree overnight. So it went up last night from -15. Yesterday morning at -15. It went up to 5 degrees yesterday afternoon, and it kind of stayed stable overnight. That means it was cloudy, I guess. That's what it's been. And the wind, what's the wind been? Yeah, it's a brisk 11, 12 miles an hour, sort of fairly stable throughout.
Wonderful stuff, boys. Looking very much forward to the week. Yeah. Don't forget, folks, if you want to send us a message, if you want to comment on anything that you've heard talked about on Spin the Rally Pod, at Dirtfish Rally on Twitter. You can also go and have a look at our videos. It's the Dirtfish YouTube channel. Leave us a comment there as well. Boys, it's been great. George Donaldson, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Great,
and
guys.
Luke, thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you very much, everyone. And Colin, I'm definitely not jealous that you're heading out there this week because it looks fantastic.
It's going to be great, folks. We will see you all next Monday. Yeah. But don't forget, in between time, dirtfish.com, the place to be for all the news from Rally Sweden.